Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough real estate tax or financial problem keeping you up at night? Ask your questions free at InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. That's InvestingSimplifiedRadio.com. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're joining us today, thank you for making us a part of your day. I'm Bo Caldwell, President CEO of Price Financial Group, here in studio with you. And joining me is our planner extraordinaire, Matt Sudol. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Bo. How's it going? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I mean, you know, it's been a little while since the New Year, so I know we're still wishing that, but I continue to wish that to people because I think it's just positive.
Yeah, the first half the month or so, then you can switch off to other things, but until then, you're just like, hey, how's your new year? Hope it's starting off well.
Yeah. Happy New Year. Happy New Year to all of you out there. I hope you have, if you're writing checks or if you've had to date things, I don't know if you struggle with this, Matt, but I struggle with it when I just went to the eye doctor just the other day.
No glasses, I see.
Glasses, yeah, because you got to order them. So apparently I need glasses for, you know, because we spend a lot of time.
We did tell suck about your birthday, so that age is
I am getting old. Yeah. So old, almost 40. But so the you know, signing, what I was talking about is, you know, every year this happens to me. But luckily this year there's a fix for it, right? So every year when it changes over, at least for the first month or two, I have trouble because I'm so used to, you know, doing the dates pretty fast. So do 010, you know, 01, 010, you know, 110, 20. But it's not 20 anymore. It's 2021, right? But the nice thing about this year is if you put the 20, just add the 2-1.
Yeah, that's true.
So other than before when you had to do, you know, 19 and then it wasn't in the 19s, right?
Yeah. You know, it's interestingly enough, every year at the bank we would have this issue because people would come with checks dated for January 2020 and they're stale at that point because it's been a year.
Yeah.
So we can't accept them usually at the banks, and so you have to get them reissued, or, you know, usually person can have it crossed off and initialed by the signer, which doesn't always people
fly.
Usually understand. It's fine. Yeah. You know, it's just,
well, so if someone writes a check from 2020 and without barring the fix that we just said, right? Because you can't, if you just put 2-0, but if you put 2020, then it would be wrong. So is there normally a 6-month, 8-month? I know it varies, you know, bank by bank.
On personal checks, the rule of thumb is usually 6 months.
Okay.
I believe, and don't quote me on that, but, you know, check with your local bank, whatever you're banking with. Each might have a little bit different rules. Cashier's checks are the ones that I think are good for a year.
A year, cashier's check. Because I know when you get checks sent out from, if you're doing a rollover from a 401k or a 403b, something like that, it says on there void after 180 days.
Yeah, that's pretty standard. So, yeah, keep an eye on the 2021. And speaking of checks, we were we were talking about the stimulus checks going.
Yeah.
So that's a big deal that's happening.
I know they started rolling out. I talked to folks who got their stimulus check, last weekend. You know, so you folks have gotten over the weekend, and it's surprising and not surprising, you know, because they went through it once, right? So they kind of got the structure down. But if the stimulus has come out and it got approved, the president signed it, you know, we've got $600 per person. If you made under $75,000 as an individual in 2019 or under $150,000 as a married couple in 2019, you get $600 per person, including children.
Yeah.
So you can get that money coming out, and it should be deposited directly into your bank account if you use direct deposit for your tax filings, whether that's refunds or them pulling it directly for your money owed for taxes. Mm-hmm. The nice thing, and we've talked about this, we talked about it with Kevin when he was on previously, and great news, I'm going to sidebar right there. Kevin Stagey we got confirmation we're going to have him on the show next week, and at least for the next couple weeks, he's going to be joining us.
Yeah, he said that January is usually pretty quiet for him.
Yeah, so before he goes into hibernation with tax season, absolutely. Right? So we got, you know, Kevin's going to be on the show answering your questions. Taylor's on today, and hopefully we'll be able to keep that up. Taylor will be on a little bit later in the show today. So if you have a question for Taylor, for Kevin, or you know, for Matt or myself, or when Matt May or our other Matt comes back into the studio, you can shoot that to askbo@pfgwm.com or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com and leave it there on the chat line. And actually, Matt, we were talking, and we'll get back into the stimulus here in a second, but I wanted to bring up, we now have the ability for folks, if you are listening to the radio, you're walking somewhere, don't do it if you're driving. If you're driving, make sure you pull over before you do this, because don't text and drive. Right. But you can text the word review to 484848, correct?
You got it.
Yeah, so text the word review to 484848 if you'd like to schedule an appointment with our team. Again, it is no obligation, no cost, you know, consultations that we do for folks. We've been doing them, you know, the last couple of weeks. It's been a lot of good feedback for folks to come in and just take a second look. You know, it's meeting with some folks that wanted a review this last week. And they have a pretty good grasp on where they are. They've got pensions. They've got, you know, Social Security figured out. They've got some good plans. But their thought was, hey, it doesn't hurt to sit down and have a second look.
Exactly,
take a
second
look at where that's going. And maybe that involves your retirement planning. Maybe that involves your investment planning. You're looking at doing investment property, when to take Social Security. We will run that Social Security maximization calculation for you. Or maybe it's what to do with your stimulus check.
Yeah, that could be another question. So what should you do, Bo?
Since I brought it up to put me on the spot, you know, what should you do? Well, you know, most of the time, I really like to use that stimulus check to pay off debt. I think that for me personally is one of my favorite things to do with it, because if you've got some, you know, you can make a couple extra payments, or you can set it aside to pay off some of that, you know, that long-term high interest debt, particularly if you've got some credit card debt that you've accumulated over the past few months with the pandemic. I know that's not what they want out of the stimulus. They want, the idea behind the stimulus is people will go out and spend it.
Stimulate.
But most people, I think, that are receiving the stimulus check have spent their money already, right? So they need to backfill it. So if you have some high credit card debts, I like doing that. I like paying off the credit card debt. I like establishing or reestablishing your emergency fund.
Right. So I think that's definitely a good one, because if you have potentially drained that, you can, you know, partially fund it or fully fund it, so you have some money set aside for another rainy day that maybe in the future. So that's a good idea too.
Well, that's the other thing that I talked about with, you know, with the folks this week, was I don't know when you know, a pullback like 2008 is going to happen again, if it is. I don't know when a pullback by like 2020 is going to happen again, if it is. I don't know that we'll have that sharp of a decline, but what I do know is at some point between now and the end of time, we will have an economic recession, and probably we'll have an economic depression.
Right? Probably have a few of them.
You know, between now and the end of time, sure. But so you want to make sure that you are working to get prepared for those items, right? So you want to make sure that you are working to get prepared from the standpoint of what happens if the market takes a turn. Because one of the things that, you know, I wanted to bring up today as we talk about the stimulus and the reasons behind it, right? They're sending it out because, contrary to what the market shows, economically, the country is in a bit of a recession right now. And a recession is not necessarily a terrible thing. It's not great. I mean, ideally, we don't fall into recessions and we don't fall into depressions. But when you look at the economy as a whole, a recession is just, it just stands for when you have two consecutive quarters of GDP decline, right? So the economy is slowing down, and for obvious reasons. We had this medically induced coma that we've been in for a few months. For a few months now, for almost a year now, right? With the economy, the economy slowing down. And so you're going to have times where the economy is slowing down. Maybe the market hasn't caught up to that, or maybe the market digested it and then saw, because the market is forward looking, right?
Exactly.
So we saw what's going to happen in the future as we come out of it. And I'm hopeful that once we are allowed to, you know, congregate again, once it's safe to go out and you know, go to restaurants and to go out shopping and to go traveling and go on trips and things, I'm hopeful that there will be a significant amount of pent-up demand.
Yeah, I think you, amongst other people, are hoping for the same, you know. But at the same time, you were saying, you know, we wouldn't be getting a stimulus if we weren't in a
yeah. state of in a state of trouble. So, yeah, where people need
kind of
help.
Like something to potentially kickstart things and, you know, get that going. You know, there may be more. We'll see in the future. But in the meantime, you know, as the economy hopefully starts reopening up, hopefully, you know, those jobs come back to restaurants and, you know, mm-hmm. the travel sectors that have been hit the hardest. And then we'll get out of this state of, as you said, medically induced coma.
Yeah, well, I'm cautiously optimistic, right? We're seeing good signs, seeing good progress on things. But, you know, as always, there are bumps in the road and there are issues that come up. We want to be prepared for them. Hence why I think good use of the stimulus is setting that emergency fund aside, paying off some of that debt, maybe so you don't have those payments if you experience some sort of hardship in the future downturns or future, you know, recession areas that will happen. Another thing that I, you know, discovered, and I was talking to a client about it just the other day, and she made a really good point, because I know there's a lot of folks who feel guilty about the stimulus, right? Because that number that they picked, it's a pretty arbitrary number, right? 150,000 as a couple, or
right.
75,000. I don't think it's arbitrary. I shouldn't say that. I'm sure they have metrics that they're
yeah.
looking at. But a lot of folks may not have been negatively affected by the pandemic, but maybe just didn't make that much money, right? But their job was steady. They're still doing okay. And she was one of them that said, hey, I didn't really experience any sort of hardship. I she felt very guilty taking the money for mm-hmm. obvious reasons. One, because she didn't need it. She felt like it could have gone to people that needed it.
Right.
And two, because the stimulus, the spending money that they're doing, that the government seems to be doing, and this is regardless of your political party, folks, right? You know, a lot of people will say, oh, the Democrats spend more money or the Republicans spend more. They both do. They spend it on different things, but it seems that in Washington, they just spend money.
Right.
then our day, you know, it's going to come home to roost at some point, right? Chuck's been talking about it for the entire time he's been on the radio, right? You know, hey, this is a real problem, the national debt. I understand why they're putting out the stimulus, but her problem was twofold, right? I don't need this, and it's just, you know, hurting the debt. We were talking about, well, I wish there was some way to opt out, right? To say, hey, I don't need it. Don't give me my money. But what she came up with, because there isn't an opt out, was she donated her stimulus, and she's planning on doing it again with this next one as well, is to find,
Very
you know,
thoughtful.
Find a charity where there's something in need, because there are people that need help. There are organizations that can use that help, and it's kind of a double bonus there if you're itemizing deductions, right?
That's true.
So, hey, you got this tax-free stimulus, which, just to reiterate again, the stimulus payments are not income. They're not going to be considered income,
right?
And we verified that with Kevin, right?
Yeah.
And she took that and then took that money that was basically free money, right? Free to her, but it's going to come to roost in tax dollars eventually.
Right. Exactly.
But took that in and donated it. What mm-hmm. a great idea, I thought.
Yeah, no, I think that's a very thoughtful idea. You know, if you feel like you've got enough and you haven't been affected, you know, that's one way of doing it. And as you said, if you're itemizing, you could take a tax write-off on it. There's lots of charities you could do. You could also, I mean, you don't have to go far. Maybe there's a neighbor or friend or somebody you know that maybe struggled. You want to maybe help them out. And,
sure. You
know, I've seen people go to I don't know if PG would do it, but, you know, any electrical company, you can call and pay some people's bills or pay somebody groceries at the store. I mean, little acts of kindness, and you can kind of do it that way. I feel like that's humanity showing its true self, which is great to see. You know, you see those posts online or on the news, people.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether they say Kickstarters or GoFundMe things, those sort of things. I think they can be a really positive way to positively impact folks. And especially if you don't feel like you need the money or don't feel like you know, if you feel guilty for getting the stimulus. The other option, and, you know, it's self-serving for us, conceivably, is put it in your investment account, right?
Yeah.
Put that money to work. So if you've exhausted the option of, hey, I I've got my emergency fund set up. I don't have a whole lot of debt or no debt, which would be ideal, right?
Exactly.
If you had no debt. And maybe there isn't a charity particularly that speaks to you, so you want to put that money to work, you can invest those dollars, right? Consider putting it into your Roth account, right? If you haven't been fully funding your Roth, consider, you know, putting it just in, you know, you could set up an online, you know, I don't want to, you know, tell people what to do, but you could set up one of those online, you know, stock accounts, Acorns or Robinhood or whatever they are, where you just put $600 in and buy a couple stocks and let it ride. See what happens, right? You never know. Could, you know, some of those accounts that, you know, the TD Ameritrades of the world, they're offering, I think, like $400 or $500 to open an account and fund it.
Yeah, some of them have promotions. You can also figure out how much that would be per paycheck and maybe bump your contributions up.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good idea, too. Yeah.
You'll get a smaller paycheck, but you don't really feel it because it offsets it. So yeah. $600 a year is about, what, $50 a month, right?
Yeah.
So there's a multitude of options for sure.
Yeah, that, to have. And that kind of goes on the double dipping thing, too, like we talked about with the charitable donation, right? So if you took that $600, so $50 a month is $50 a month less than a paycheck. But that also means that you have $50 a month less of income this next year. And you're funding your, it's a way to kind of backdoor in the funding retirement. I like that, Matt. You have good ideas. Maybe we'll keep you.
I try. I try my best to come up with these.
Well, we're going to take a quick break here. I think that's a good spot to take a break as we're talking about stimulus, talking about, you know, these regulations that are coming out. Taylor Cattell is going to come in the office here next and join us. We'll ask her some questions that have been on her mind. Check in with, you know, the Cover Your Assets segment. I love that name. It's so great.
It's a very good name.
But if you got a question for Taylor to answer, if you got a question for us to answer, shoot it to askbo@pfgwm.com. Or if you'd like to schedule that no obligation consultation with our team, either in person, over the phone, or virtually via Zoom, we are happy to schedule those appointments for you. Give us a call, 503-253-3000, or text, what is
48, 48, 48, and you text
review.
Review.
Right? So text review to 48, 48, 48. We'll be right back with Cover Your Assets, part of Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement with their Social Security Seminar on Demand. Now, you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you've invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years, so shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary, and without a plan, that can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
We do Investing Simplified.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thank you for making us a part of your day. As a reminder, if you have a question that has been keeping you up at night, please shoot it to AskBo, A-S-K-B-O at PFGWM.com. As promised, joining me now in studio is Taylor Cattell of the KG Law Group. Hello, Taylor. Welcome
back.
Hi,
Bo. Thank you. Nice to be back.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of, you know, a lot of folks clamoring for you to come back. They want to stop listening to us. I don't know if it's because there's just too many men on the radio and they need to hear, you know, a calming female voice, or just because you're obviously smarter than we are. So they need somebody to rope us all in. But, well, I know we're excited to have you back. We were talking a little bit in the break about, you know, just some discussions that you've been having and that we've had with clients and questions. I want to put it out there to be full disclosure. It's questions that I ask you when I pop up and text right. Like, oh, no, right. I don't know how to answer this.
Right. Yeah, I know. And there's been a lot of questions, especially around this time of the year, on reviews and do I need to do an update, or what's happening with the law. And there's, you know, some politics happening in the outside world. How does that affect my estate plan? And there's a lot of questions that seem to come forward in that vein of things. And so one of the things we thought we'd talk about today is my off-the-cuff answers. Obviously, I can't give customized legal advice to anybody listening in this way, so this is not what you, listener, should do. But generally speaking, the broader you, the royal you,
right,
should be thinking about as far as how changes affect estate plans and how legal changes in particular might affect things, and political changes and just a change of circumstances. And I think the advice that I assume you would be giving a lot of your clients also is to usually just stay the course when other things outside of your immediate control are changing. Right now, there are lots of murmurs right? Mm-hmm. Lots of things out there that could happen. But we don't know what will happen. And whatever does happen, the one thing I can promise you is it will change too.
Right.
So it's hard to base an estate plan on something that's outside of your control. It's much more important to, I shouldn't say it quite like that. Everything's kind of outside of your control, sure, right? When it comes to estate planning and incapacity and these very uplifting topics. But as far as the things that are in your immediate sphere, who's your family, right? How does that relationship look with your kids, with your spouse, with your partner, with your partner's family? And if you have any non-joint kids, and if you have any other slightly complicating factors, like all of us do, things like not perfect relationships and the white picket fence, right? Do you have children or dependent parents or other factors that come into play? I find that many attorneys, and this isn't to point the finger at anybody in particular, but many attorneys will overlook the human aspects of an estate plan. And I love the mental chess of the technical part, right? There's it's not to say that you just can't have one without the other and have a comprehensive estate plan. You really need to be looking at the global picture. And part of that is the law. What does the law say? What are the tax complications? Sure. What are the technical pieces? How do we put the tools in your toolbox to get you flexibility and to not pay more money than you know otherwise would have to, if that's especially something that's a higher priority for you. But that's not all there is to it. We also have to think through what are the dynamics that we're setting up, right? How is this specific piece worded, and is it going to be interpreted in a way that's hurtful?
Sure.
Is that going to set off lawsuits between heirs? That's going to cost the estate vastly more than the potential estate tax ramifications, right?
Yeah.
The number one cost in the administration of an estate, from my perspective, is how well does everybody get along?
Sure. Well, the only people that the adage that I've heard a lot, and this comes from an attorney, so this is not attorney specific, but the only people that win in litigation are the lawyers.
Right. Right.
You know, when you have to go and sue somebody for whatever reason, especially if it's interfamily related, right, then you've got these contested estates, then the people that are winning are not the people contesting it or the people defending it or whoever ends up winning the decision. It's
right.
The attorneys that were billing those hours to get everything filed, right?
And if there's money there,
right,
then what's the incentive to settle?
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The incentive to settle for the client is, I don't want to lose my money, right? I would rather have the money in my pocket. And so it's your own cost-benefit analysis. But especially in estate situations, it doesn't feel quite like it's your money, right? Because it's not something that you've necessarily, well, maybe you have done some planning around it, but it's not like you've taken your paycheck and you've put it in the bank account and now you're pulling it out of the bank account in order to pay the legal fees. It's like this, it's a step removed. It's money you could have. It's almost like personal injury proceeds. It hasn't hit the bank account yet, so I'm going to gamble it and hope that this is what I'm going to get, and I'm going to get it more if I can prove that I'm right. Oh, and by the way, this is tapping into a lifelong grudge I've had as the baby child or against my older sibling who's always controlled me, and now I'm going to show them that I'm not under their thumb. You know, and again, it's not, it's probably similar to what you might face when there are other things that have emotional attachment and triggers, and it's a very complex emotional place to be, especially when you have grief and money entering into the same equation. And what is often very illuminating for me as an attorney is the disconnect between what I can see is clearly an emotional-based decision,
sure,
and what the client is perceiving as factual. Mm-hmm. It's almost scientific. This is not emotional decision. And that all is the part of the reason I love this area of the law, and part of the reason why this is I don't want to say this is a unique area of the law. I think that comes in with all of our human decisions, but with estate planning in particular, we have some tools and we have very technical aspects of the work, but then we're also trying to pre-anticipate what these triggers might be, right? Mm-hmm. What is it that could be coming down the pipe, and how do we protect your legacy from the attacks that could be there. So maybe that one of your children has always felt slighted, but they also tend to not work.
Sure.
Right? Sure. And so you have one, let's say it's a family business, and you have one child who has been, you know, showing up every day and putting in the time and enabling you to ride off into the sunset in a retirement situation. And if you were to pass that business interest on to that child, then you've got another child out there who's ready and willing to sue him.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm expecting the estate to pay for my fees, and all of this is coming out of good child's pocket. And here we go. Right. And this is not uncommon. So how do you set it up for success? Right. And what are the tools that you can look ahead, anticipate? Okay. No matter what we do, somebody's going to be unhappy.
Right.
What can I do now to have a contract that's outside of my plan with the sale of the business? Maybe.
Sure, sure.
Right? How do we have it so that it's maybe a private situation, a trust administration, instead of having a will where everything could be out in probate with official notices and things that just make it a little easier to make it difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's just anticipation of those types of things that I think are really, really important. All this circling back is when legal aspects change, when the technical tools change, you should make sure you have all the right tools in your toolbox. I would say, as a rule of thumb, every 5 years.
Okay.
Sit down and have an attorney look at it. Right? Every 5 years, something has changed.
Yeah.
And it may or may not change what they recommend for you, and it may or may not change the tools that are applicable to you, but it would be worth the cost of a review to have an attorney who knows what they're doing look at those technical pieces and check in on the human pieces.
Sure.
And say, has something changed? Has that, you know, that no good son finally gotten a job and now he understands what it's like to work, and maybe we split things equally, or, you know, your other child who's part of the business has formed their own, or whatever the changes might be. But to pay more attention to validate or prioritize the changes in your own circumstances far more than any specific clock.
Right.
That if something significant happens to you, your family, that's the time to sit down and say, okay, well, how would that impact? Is there something I can do now that I anticipate this happened in this way? Married somebody, right? My child married somebody, and I'm not sure how that's going to go, right? Are there tools out there that can help us avoid something that's going to be much more stressful and expensive for my family?
Sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. What I, you know, hearing and we kind of circling back, like you said, is what we talked about in the break is don't worry about, but when you're looking at what changes may be coming from a new administration and, you know, in the political spectrum, what may be coming from new tax laws, whether they be on estates or capital gains or income, what may be coming from those different aspects. It's not necessarily, yes, for sure, get a review, make sure that, you know, everything is set up, you have the right tools, but that doesn't mean you have to drastically change anything, because the primary reason for having these, like you said, it's about the relationships with who's going to be taking over your estate or who's going to be a part of what you're trying to leave your estate to, right? Because that administration in, tax rules, estate rules in and out, that part doesn't necessarily change unless it changes from your perspective, right?
Right, so, and that's the boring stuff for the client and the fun stuff on the back end, so to speak. Yeah. But that's and that is something to take a look at. But that's not going to be where the heart and soul or frankly the cost is, right? As far as the comprehensive changes, so it's absolutely worth a review to at least take a look at those technical pieces, because you may not know about them.
Sure.
And pay attention to all of that. But I wouldn't have that be what is your guiding light on whether it's time to make a change.
Right. So at rule of thumb, just to reiterate for folks that, you know, if they're listening, 5 years or so, make sure just have a look at it, make sure whatever's changed. But are there other changes that you normally see? I mean, obviously, intrinsically, we can think about when you need to affect changes, you know, if you got married, got a divorce, had a child,
right?
Those are the three big ones that are easy. And I think everybody realizes that's a time to look at that. Although if you hadn't thought about that, if you've recently got married, divorced, right, or had a child, make sure you're looking at...
Especially the divorce one.
Yeah.
Well, because that's a big impact. And you, a lot of folks don't... And marriage, because there's... a lot of folks don't know out there, but in Oregon, marriage itself revokes your will.
Interesting.
Not a trust.
That's the first time I've ever heard that. That's I mean, it makes sense, I guess, but that's...
Right. So for late in life, second marriages...
Your will is now void.
You didn't want your will to be void. You wanted to keep it like it was. Hers is hers and mine, you know, mine is mine.
Yeah.
But I just want to be married so that she can get my Social Security survivor's benefits.
Right, right.
Right? I mean, this happens. She can go on my health insurance. She can whatever.
Yeah.
Or he can.
Yeah.
And then, whoops. Right? And then the default rules come into play.
Everything just goes to him or her.
Right. So divorce, it's a little bit different because once you're legally divorced... It's treated as if your former spouse predeceased you.
Interesting.
So that could be what you want. It could not be what you want.
Right.
Right. But it doesn't invalidate everything. You still have something. It's just treated a little bit differently than you might expect. But with marriage, it just kind of takes it away. And again, that's not true with a revocable trust.
Okay.
So it invalidates your pour over will, but you can kind of get to the same. I actually haven't thought through what that would look like if you had to go through the probate process for things. But I think you could make certainly an argument that that wasn't the intent. And I'm sure you could find your way to lawyer around it. But the point being, if there's a marriage of any kind, that's really, I would say the two sticky wickets are married, period. Right.
Sure.
You have to, even if it's re-executing the exact same document,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and just says, I want this will to be effective. I'm now married to XYZ.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. If you anticipate that you're going to be married, then what I do for my clients are saying, hey, we're planning to get married. We've held off on the wedding because of COVID and we want to have a celebration. So we're just indefinitely, you know, engaged, but we want to finish our estate plan. We intend to be married. That's enough.
Okay.
Right. I'm planning to. So you can still have an estate plan and state that your intent, but if it's just silent, that's where there's no contrary provision that would say it's anything but revoked. So it's revoked.
Interesting.
And with divorcing, that treating your former spouse as predeceased you is when the judgment dissolving your marriage is signed.
Oh, okay.
So there can be a long time.
Yeah, between that.
Between the time that you have committed to dissolving your marriage, you file the paperwork, and then you can sit there, right? And you're debating over custody, or you're fighting over assets or retirement accounts, or you're dividing what those are, right? And depending on how quickly your case moves through the system and whether there's any hiccups on selling a house or, you know, spousal support or whatever it is, you're still married.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Your will is still, if you were to become incapacitated during the divorce and you have a power of attorney that names your spouse,
sure,
who's able to make legal decisions on your behalf.
Financial decisions
on your behalf, right? It's entirely possible for an agent to complete the divorce. So how does that work, right? Who is it who's going to... And there's some situations where I've seen this happen, and somebody has limited capacity and they're in the process of getting a divorce. And there are some very gracious spouses out there who will just say, I resign. Right. I don't have to. And we'll let the alternate agent, who's usually a child or a friend or somebody they often both trust, to basically duke out the rest of the terms of the divorce. But what if you don't? what if the spouse says, thank you very much, I have the legal authority to negotiate with myself for all the things that I want?
Sure. If it's a particularly, you know, the opposite of amicable, non-amicable. I can't think of the word right now. But, you know, if it's a particularly contentious divorce.
You can come up with some pretty, not pleasant.
Yeah, bad potential scenarios,
right?
Yeah.
And these things really, they do happen. And so, especially with the power of attorney piece, there's not much you can do about. I mean, you can have a new will. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot that you can do. That gets more complicated as far as if you have a pending divorce and you're concerned about it, but. But the power of attorney pieces, and especially advanced directive healthcare decisions,
yeah,
having your spouse still be the person who makes that call, right? If mm-hmm. you're pending divorce, there's other things to think about, yeah. If there are changes in your, and we went off on this interesting tangent. I didn't mean to no, go deep into marriage and divorce, but yes.
Yeah. Well, we're not saying, you know, not suggesting anyone should get divorced or, no. you know, yeah, but if, no. if it is, well, you know, one thing that came up just to continue down that tangent, but I was thinking you mentioned the sort of blended family or separate yeah. children, I could see that could really be a problem mm-hmm. if you had, you know, children from a prior marriage that then maybe the new spouse
right.
cuts out of the will ostensibly because you're even though you're in divorce proceedings, but you haven't actually gotten divorced. Now you're incapacitated. They have they're the agent for you in financial transactions, and the negotiation is, hey, I'm taking all this stuff and cutting them out.
Right.
Woof.
Right. Yep. Yeah. There's a lot to consider. Non-joint children is a very common mm-hmm, thing mm-hmm. these days.
Sure.
There's a lot of people living longer than they expected. And it's not how I think it doesn't have the same negative perception that past generations might have seen, where it means that you were, you know, you had illegitimate children and then you, you know, got together later. It's that's not what I'm seeing. I am seeing second marriages where there was a lifelong commitment and one spouse passed.
Right.
And now you've got adult children who are launched and you don't want to be alone for the rest of your life. And right. you happen to find a neighbor, a friend, a former, you know, coworker, yeah. Somebody who is in a similar situation, and you're ready to make another lifelong commitment. That's wonderful. I that's very positive in almost all the scenarios that I'm thinking through. But you have adult children now from two mm-hmm. different families who don't know each other.
Right.
They weren't raised as siblings, right? They weren't raised to share in that, right? They right. lost mom, and now dad is going off and marrying the neighbor, right? Right. And it's not looking the same. And so to anticipate that, there's a lot we can do to plan for that, right? There's a lot of different ways that we can provide reassurance to the kids, provide support for the spouse, and a lot of creative options that we sure. can put in there, depending on what does your spouse need, what do your kids need, right? It's just very, very fact dependent. But these are the types of questions that we would explore. These are the yeah. types of questions we would talk about that are specific to, you know, different for every situation. And the tools don't necessarily change, but you tweak them, right? And you customize to make sure that the presentation of it feels good to the people that your target audience, so to right. speak, right? Who's right. going to be reading this after you're gone?
That makes a lot of sense. So other than, you know, and so we can get out of here, just, you know, give folks a break here. But other than time or these big life mm-hmm. events, is there, would you say maybe, because what I've come across lately is significant changes in your net worth in your mm-hmm. estate value, conceivably, right? Because
yep.
laws have changed even in the last 10 years.
Yep.
If your estate planning was done, you know, 10, 15 years ago.
Even five right now,
just right. from the, yeah, I from would, the changes in terms of the estate planning.
There's been significant changes, particularly with retirement accounts. But I would really say that if you haven't had somebody look at your plan for 5 years, have somebody look at your plan. It's worth it, right? There's a lot of things that were even 5, 10 years ago that have changed as far as just understanding how to coordinate your assets. So
right.
I think passage of time, changes in your life and circumstances, change in your net worth, not just in the value, but in the nature of your assets.
Sure.
So if you were very liquid and then you started, you know, bought commercial property or rental property or vacation homes, particularly out of state.
Right. Multi-state.
Yeah. Or if you move from one state to another state, you do need to have somebody take a look at those documents. It doesn't have to be a whole comprehensive revision. Sometimes it's just updating some of the little basics and making sure you know what your options are.
Sure.
And the differences from state to state. But I think those are really the highlights. I think there's a lot of different pieces, but it can be hard to keep track
mm-hmm.
of what your life looked like before that change happened, right? Things like that happen
yeah.
kind of slowly and over time. It's like, gosh, when did I do my plan? What has changed since then? It tends to creep up on people. And that's why I go with the 5-year mark. I think it's an easy, simple takeaway of usually something has changed.
Right. I like
within it. Within a 5 year.
I like it. So if you'd like to do that review of your assets, your estate planning, excuse me, when I have somebody, I'm so used to assets, right? your estate planning done, if it's been 5 years, if something material has changed, or if you just want to bounce, hey, this is what I'm thinking now that the administration is changing, any of these things, how do people get a hold of you? Where do they call?
Best thing is to call our office, 503-878-8948. You can also find us online at kglawgroup.com.
Perfect. And if you missed that, you can leave a question on investingsimplifiedradio.com or shoot me an email at askbo@pfgwm.com. I'd be happy to connect you with Taylor and her team. Well, thank you for joining us, Taylor. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
Got a tough estate tax or financial problem keeping you up at night? Ask your questions free at investingsimplifiedradio.com. That's investingsimplifiedradio.com or by emailing askbo@pfgwm.com. You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now joining us, thank you. Thank you for making us a part of your day. I want to remind folks, if you'd like to schedule an in-person via Zoom or a phone appointment with one member of our team, text REVIEW, R-E-V-I-E-W, to 484848. And you can set up a complimentary consultation there, or you can send an email to askbo@pfgwm.com or give us a call, 503-253-3000. We're able to meet folks here in Beaverton, down in Tigard. We're able to meet them up in Vancouver, over in Clackamas, anywhere around the Portland metro area. We have locations that we can meet with you if you are comfortable meeting in person. We've taken the necessary safety precautions, sanitation, wear our masks, and all the things.
Yeah, we're trying to stay safe, but we're also trying to be on top of new ways of doing business. And we were talking about that a little bit about that on the break time, where, you know, we had some interactions with clients and people brought up some good ideas. The fact being that things are changing, the world's changing as it always has, but this 2020 change threw us all for a loop, and now it's the new normal, and it's going to take some time before we go back to the old normal, and we may never...
If we ever do.
Yeah,
right.
we may not ever completely go back to, you know, working in the office. Lots of companies have announced that they're working from home, right?
Exclusively from home. Well, I think that's it's still in place that the governor's order is, if you can, you have to offer the work from home.
Work from home, right? Yeah. So that's, you know, at some point that'll probably go away, but... You know, companies, I know some of the large companies, tech companies have said, you know, if you want to work from home forever, you can. So they've made that claim. No, some of them could retract it, but probably won't. Some of them might have had, you know, leases expiring in spaces, which is probably partially why made them do that. You know, going back to restaurants will be, I feel like, almost exciting again. Like if you would.
I'm excited to be able to go back.
And actually be, you know, next to another person that's, you know, maybe having dinner and saying hello. And so that I feel like we'll come back to that. I think restaurants are hopefully going to come back roaring back, I hope. And travel, you know, I know our retirees like to travel. I like to travel when I have time too. But, you know, retirees traveling, that's a big part of retirement.
Well, it's a lot of people's goals. We hear that a lot, right?
Yeah, we do.
That, hey, it's travel, whether it's internationally or domestically. But the travel may change, right? That's what we talked about. And that you mentioned, you know, client mentioning that, you know, what's worked in the past and what, you know, was the normal before, and whether that's in terms of investing or just life in general. I think the new normal is a new normal, at least to a certain extent, right? We're approaching a new age, and it's been a seismic shift, right, in 2020. You know, it's a pivot from, now masks are ubiquitous, right? You just not, you know, mine doesn't even leave my neck. I don't even notice it's there. Occasionally I've tried to get in the shower and gone, oh no, I got to take my mask off, right? Not on my face, but hanging around my neck. And you just get used to those sort of things. But from an investment side too, right? It makes sense to always be, you mentioned it, it always changing. The world is always changing, but we've had a significant, almost a seismic shift in the way that, you know, investing and the way that planning has gone. We've changed a lot of the ways that we look at things because everything's just different, right? We've seen a rotation. We've seen what is a quote unquote normal rotation, right? Out of, you know, technology just screamed this year. What did the NASDAQ return for 2020? It was like 45% or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
right?
It was quite a bit. So, you know, the rotation in the investment world means, you know, money always flows from one way to another way.
It doesn't
disappear, right? So it rotates out of perhaps technology, maybe into value, or, you know, when you see
by value, we're talking, you know, utilities, energy stocks, mm-hmm. you know, possibly airlines if travel starts to come back, right?
Right. The dividend payers, right?
Yeah.
So it could be rotating there. You know, you've got sometimes gold goes, you know, when you see it dropping, the money's going somewhere. You know, maybe going out of gold into the stock market, or it could be going from the stock market to the bond market.
Or it could be going from the bond market to cryptocurrency. I mean, there is, like you said, that's a key point that I think a lot of people don't really realize, right? And we kind of gloss over it because it's so normal to us, mm-hmm. right? But when the market goes down, that doesn't mean that, because the money's going somewhere. Money's got to flow somewhere,
exactly.
right? Exactly. And depends on where it flows. It could be flowing into cash.
Yes.
Could be flowing into bonds, into treasuries. It could be flowing into other stocks, like you were saying, could be flowing into gold. And I have talked to a lot of folks who invest in the physical bullion, in the actual gold, or who just invest in gold tracking instruments. They're called derivatives, right? To track the price of gold. Mm-hmm. You have folks that are moving into cryptocurrency. They have folks that are moving into just in straight cash into T-bills. There's a lot of changes, it appears, in what is a traditional safe haven. But the key is to make sure that you have a plan that is evolving as the world evolves, right? As things change, you got to make sure that your plan is nimble, because a lot of times, you know, folks are stuck, you know, have stuck by the tried and true 60-40 portfolio, 60% stocks, 40% bonds. And in a time when stocks and bonds are nearing all-time highs together, now I grant that I've been saying this for years now, right, that we're in an inflection point where I think the market could pull back, but it keeps pushing higher because money is flowing in, right? That means that there is money coming into the market, whether or not it's tied to the economy. So you want to make sure that your plan is prepared for all of that, right? We want to make sure that you have as many arrows in your quiver as you can, so you have different options. And, you know, I like to say there's a place for everything. Every type of investment vehicle, I think there's a place for. It may or may not be in your portfolio. Right.
And it also depends on how much you're going to be putting in.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, sure.
You know, you can have some gold, but maybe it's just a couple percentages points of your portfolio. You could have some cryptocurrency as it's been doing quite well. Yeah. I mean, but the same goes
quite well, followed by quite poorly, followed by super well, followed by quite poorly.
It's been like a, you know, one of those
roller coasters.
Yeah. Or yeah. Just like playing.
Or a barcode, you know, up and down and up and down and up and down, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's been all around. But, you know, and then rotation also happens within the same asset classes a little bit. So if you were talking about, you know, companies, money could be going from large companies to small companies to middle.
Sure.
So, you know, as you said, you have to have a plan and sort of anticipate what will happen. You can't predict what will happen for sure. But when it's going on, you can get a good idea of when it's happening. When you're in the moment, you can kind of see it transforming. And if you're working with a team, they should have a general idea of what's happening. Where should you be going now? Nobody's going to be 100% correct all the time.
Right.
But if you have somebody that's looking out for you while you're, you know, out there working, you have a regular 9-to-5 job and you don't have the time to spend it, you know, to look at what's going on in the economy and, what's rotating now? And, you know, what does that even mean? Then you'd want to work with the team to help you with that.
Right. Well, and you know, the key that you mentioned in there is having a plan and being prepared for, you know, what's coming. But the other side of it is, you know, when you're looking at a diversified portfolio, it might have little pieces of all these different things. And so when you're looking at that, the purpose of a diversified portfolio, right, of having a all-weather or well-balanced portfolio is that you can weather the storms. You're not going to catch all of the ups. You're also not going to catch all of the downs. And the hope is, we talked about this, I think, maybe a month or two ago, when with the jelly bean chart, right? That's what Matt calls it.
The quilt chart. Yeah.
Where you can see that, you know, gold did the best last year, hypothetically. I'm not, you know, I don't think it did last year. I think NASDAQ did the best, right? So you could own QQQ, you know, the ETF that tracks the NASDAQ. That did the best last year, but maybe that will drag this year, and it's going to be the DIA, the Dow Jones, right? Mm-hmm. The Dow 30 is going to do the best this year. And, or maybe it's cryptocurrency this year, or, but then next year, it, you know, you hear people that say, anybody that tells you, folks, that, and this is, I generally stay away from making blanket recommendations, but my blanket recommendation is, for me, you know, in my opinion, you shouldn't have more than 5% of your liquid net worth tied up in any one investment. That doesn't mean any one account, right, but any one specific investment, which it can really work out really well, but then you're not investing, you're not playing, you're gambling if you're putting more than that, I think, in your portfolio. Now, you might skew that a little more if it did really well, like you bought Tesla or Zoom Communications, you know, ones that were high flyers this last year, right, in that NASDAQ. And maybe it got overbought, and so now you need to trim down a little bit if you don't want to worry about having too much risk, right? You have too many eggs in one basket, right. And if it falls, now it can work out really well.
It can, right? And a lot of times it does. But, you know, sometimes people say, well, I'm in the business of technology, and so right. I work for X company, and I know so much about it. Should I have more? You could, but, you know, truly, you likely don't have any insider information, and if you did, you probably wouldn't hold as much either. And so you want to make sure that you're still diversifying. As much as it hurts you almost to watch the stock continue to go up, you know, the right thing would be to diversify, because at some point in the future, it'll have a pullback.
Right. What goes up, generally speaking, comes down, right? And mm-hmm. so you want to make sure that you don't have too much exposed to that particular company as it goes up. You know, there's a lot of scuttlebutt about, you know, about cryptocurrency and how great it's done. And it has over the last couple of weeks, right? It's just been on a tear. Or the last year, really.
Yeah.
It's done really, really well. But it did really, 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 really well back in 2017. And then in 2018, it dropped through the floor.
Exactly.
Do I know that's going to happen? No, I have no idea in terms of what exactly is going to happen over the next few years. But that just behooves you to not have all, and anybody that tells you, hey, I've got the corner on this, and this is where you should put all your money, they're selling you snake oil, right? That, you know, there's an ulterior motive.
You got to run the other way.
Absolutely. So you want to make sure that you're diversifying your, you know, your positions and your, you know, anything, anytime you have risk. That means anytime something can go down, right, that has risk, you shouldn't have, I think, my opinion, you shouldn't have more than 5% of your liquid net worth in there, of your portfolio shouldn't be allocated to that. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't, you know, put 20% of your overall portfolio into a rental property or into an investment property. That's not liquid, right? Those aren't that's not liquid net worth. We're talking about liquid instruments that fluctuate.
Generally. It also doesn't mean that you shouldn't have more than 5% perhaps in large companies. It just means right. Don't have it all in one large company.
Exactly. So
it's just spreading the risk, spreading the wealth in a way, right? You know, you know, if you want to have tech companies, go ahead, but maybe buy, you know, a dozen of them instead of just betting just on one.
Yeah. Or buy a diversified mutual fund or ETF, right?
Because nobody's, you know, I mean, there's a saying, nobody's great at everything. So if you have a company that's just been doing really well in its sector, it could continue, but it also may not, you know, as they say, you know, past performance is not indicative of future returns by any means.
And it's that is absolutely true, right? And that's what we talked about, you know, with this new, I don't want to call it a new world, right? But moving into a new situation where you don't know. Right, what's going to happen. Yeah. You don't want to overexpose yourself to risk, right?
Yeah, in any particular area, right? If you're spread around, then, you know, if you don't know what will happen this year, if a small cap will go up, maybe small companies, or maybe it's the middle-sized ones. But if you have a little bit in each one, you'll benefit from that one going up. And then there could be another one that does mediocre, and there could be a couple that do poorly. But then overall, you're balancing it out. So you're prepared for, as you say, you know, an all-weather portfolio.
Right. And you know, it comes back to the mantra, And, you know, before we get out of here, I want to, you know, leave you with this mantra as we move into this new, like I said, this new world where there's political, you know, political news drives, you know, the market. We have virus news will drive the market. We have, you know, geopolitical, any of the above are things outside of our control. So the key is control what you can control, which is how much risk you're taking, how much planning you've done, and how prepared you are for what, you know, what's going to come. So if you want to have that review with our team, text review to 484848 or give us a call, 503-253-3000. Once again, it's no obligation. It's risk-free for you to come sit down with us. All it costs you is a little bit of your time, and we're happy to meet with you. We'll tell you what we think. We'll tell you what our outlook, and if it makes sense to you and you want to move forward with us, great. But worst case is you had a free professional second opinion on what you're doing. So give us a call, 503-253-3000, or text review to 484848. Thanks for spending some time with us today, folks. We really appreciate it. We're getting into the new year here. We are both cautiously optimistic about the outlook. Tune in next week. Kevin Stege, Taylor Cattell will be back on. Kevin will be back on the first time in quite a while. And hopefully we'll get Matt May back in here with us too. You were listening to Investing Simplified. Price Financial Group Wealth Management.
You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified at pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm with offices at 16100 Northwest Cornell, Suite 140, Beaverton, Oregon, 97006, and 7105 Southwest Varn Street, Suite 175, Portland, Oregon, 97223. You can reach us by calling 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.
Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Price Financial Group Wealth Management. We do investing simplified.